I'm going to tell you about a study that took place in five countries in Europe. And because I've only got 15 minutes, I'm only telling you about a very small part of the study. But I'll give you the website at the end so you can find out some more about it. And the headline for this theme for the day was about inspiring and practical examples. So I'm literally focusing on one kind of area. So the research aims, this was a European Union-funded project from 2008 to 2011. The research aims was about the educational pathways of young men and women in public care after the end of compulsory schooling. So from 16 onwards in all the countries except Hungary, where it was 18 onwards. And what were they doing and how were they making progress educationally? And we wanted to examine how we might encourage more of them to be supported to continue into further and higher education. And I'm going to give you a couple of examples of that today. And we wanted to compare what was happening in the five European countries, which were England. This was when I was working at the Institute of Education at the University of London. Sweden. In this, we had social work department and the education department in Sweden working on this. The Danish School of Education. In Spain, it was the Research Institute on Quality of Life. So you can see emerging some multidisciplinary perspectives here. And in Hungary, the Institute for Social Policy and Labour. I will just say for this audience that in all the countries except England, the notion of a professional role such as a pedagogue was accepted. And in England, it was a much more basic level of professional role with children and young people in state care. So these were our research methods. We had literature reviews and analysis of statistics. I'm going to tell you about statistics in a moment. The literature reviews basically found that there was almost nothing written about this topic in all the countries except for England. There was maybe one or two studies in Sweden and Denmark, nothing in either two countries. So we were starting from a very low base line of knowledge. And we interviewed social services and care managers and educators in five areas of each country. And we telephone interviews with 366 young people who were nominated to us by those social services managers to find out if they had what we called educational promise. That is, when they were at 16, did they have at least some kind of educational qualification that would enable them to carry on? And we had to, because it was so hard to find these young people, we had to modify that definition a little bit, especially in England and Sweden, and say, had they got the motivation to carry on in education? And then we carried out intensive face-to-face interviews with 170 young men and women and adults that they had nominated as having made a difference to their educational progress. And it's very interesting to hear about the study from South Africa because in many ways the sample is very similar. These are young people who've been through similar processes and come out with similar things. So this is what the statistics told us about the completion of compulsory schooling. 2006 was the latest date that we could get national data in Denmark and Sweden. And the picture is perhaps one you'll be familiar with, that the children who've been in care, they were in care at age 16, they'd spent at least a year in care of their childhoods, and they are, compared to the general population, they achieve less likely to complete schooling. And England, they're much less likely to get the grades necessary to go on into further and higher education. That's... What's interesting for us about this picture is how many of them in Denmark and Sweden were completing compulsory schooling from an English perspective. And then we looked at what we call post-compulsory, i.e. 16 to 19 education, and higher education, university education. And there we see, I think another familiar picture for those of us in the field, that relatively few people are going on, certainly, in post-compulsory education, the picture's getting much better. In England, it was about 23%. In Sweden, 80% were enrolled on the courses, but only 38% were completing them. And in Denmark, it was very low at 2.5%. And for me, from England, this was a bit of an eye-opener, because just prior to this study, we'd had a report from a Conservative minister saying that in Denmark, 60% of children go on to university from care. And I'd spent a lot of time trying to redress this myth that was repeated on multiple websites and in journalistic lingo. But what was important here is to take into account the different patterns for young people moving, all young people moving into university education, so that if in Denmark, for example, almost nobody was going to university at the age of 19 who was not in care, and nobody from care. But by the age of 27 to 30, in Danish case, there were about 7% of young people from care had got a degree. So it seems that about 6 to 7, 8% of young people from care eventually get a qualification at degree level, compared to about 40% of all young people across Europe. So then our job was to look at what the explanations were for this, and we were particularly interested in the idea of
this database has been updated.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. I think I have to, I can't click it. We were interested in the idea of welfare regimes, that is, what kind of organisation of welfare states help and support young people who've been in care to take part in education. So within the sample that we had, Denmark and Sweden were social democratic states, Spain was what they called a conservative corporatist state, UK was a liberal state, and Hungary was an emerging post-communist state. So we wanted to know what sustains participation at compulsory school age of the state characteristics, more electronic gadgets, and what enables the drastic falling off in participation at the post-compulsory phase, a really big falling off at that point. And we came up with two models. One is outside of England, is the same as everybody else. In all the four European countries, they were young people were seen as any other citizen once they got to 18, and they got the resources and facilities and support that was available to any young person at 18. And that, so obviously that depends on what kind of support level is available. And in England, we have this liberal state. We have a very residual approach to children in care and a very residual approach to supporting educational intervention. So if we go through these, I've literally put just a few comparative findings. What we have is, outside of England, most of the young people who'd been in care were participating in and completing education, although I have to say that delay was extremely common, especially in countries which allowed repeated years of education. So if you didn't get your grades 1 year, you would have to go back and do them the next year. And that was incremental and exacerbated at the point of 16 onwards. Outside of England, the care placements were relatively stable. And this is in the English data evidence. The point at moving care placement is also a point of moving school very often. So in order to get continuity of schooling, you have to stay in the same care placement. And these were extremely stable in Hungary and Spain. And that seemed a good, socially associated with much more educational success. What was interesting for us from an English perspective was that family backgrounds are almost identical in any of the countries. It was the same stories that we've heard from representatives in this room, of abuse and neglect, alcoholic parents, drug abuse in parents. Those kinds of traumas were there all the time. And often in England, we're told that our young people are at a higher level of threshold before they come into care than children on the continent. And what we also saw was about a 10-year gap, 9 to 10-year gap, between the age of leaving care and the average age of leaving home. And that's slightly different in different countries. So it's lower in Denmark because young people are given more, in general, are given more resources to leave home. It's much more possible, rather than Spain, where the tradition is for young people to stay living with their parents for much longer. What was also interesting in a comparative perspective was that the opportunities for informal education and generating social networks and using getting voluntary work experience much more highly developed in the English examples than in the other countries. They called it the English phenomena in Sweden, which is we don't have this voluntary work tradition there. And that was helping young people to engage in the formal organisational requirements of education and employment. So what seemed to work? I think everyone would agree from their experience here that continuing an unconditional personal support beyond compulsory education age was fundamental. The relational perspective was extremely important. That was supported in our examples from having well-educated workers, in particularly pedagogues in residential settings and boarding schools in Denmark and in Spain and Hungary. And it was very, very apparent that they were the young people who'd attended these facilities in those countries were having a more educationally focused experience than those in the English examples, and in Sweden too. Second, foster placements. Many of the young people had a terrible time in their first placement, usually because it had been arranged with little preparation. And they were about half, we totted up, for England, we totted up 34 young people, and we totted up all of their foster placements and whether they said they'd had a good time in them or not. And over half had had a negative experience regarding their education and support within those foster placements. But those who'd had a second and subsequent placement where they'd been able to settle had done reasonably well. Leaving care teams, I'm going to talk about those a little bit more in a moment, especially where they've got a teacher attached to them. That's an English phenomenon. And obviously having easy financial access to higher education in Sweden was helping young people to enrol on university programmes. Where the personal support could, and the social network could support the development of a learning identity, that was extremely significant for many young people, and that could come from all sorts of unanticipated quarters, such as a foster parent or a teacher or a friend or anybody who said, I've done this, you can do it too. And also promoting a sense of integration into society through volunteering and social networks. They were all important. So just to focus on on some practical initiatives from the residual model, that is England in our example, in our country scenario, we have these leaving care teams. Since 2001, we have had legislation that says that every local area has to have a leaving care team, which is multidisciplinary. It will take people, it was a combination of social workers, but they're importantly not called social workers, they're called personal advisors. And they will often have a financial responsibility to help with finance, to help with finding accommodation, to help with making arrangements for accessing counselling, whether that's drug counselling or whatever, and also for transport to college and so on. They are offering a range of practical and emotional support. But it's not perceived as control, and that's really important for the young people, that they perceive it as quite different to social work, which is often perceived as control. During the period up to 2010, the leaving care teams were working with targets imposed by government, and well, the local authorities had to achieve them, but they were filtered down to the leaving care teams. And the two targets that were relevant here were that they had to provide suitable housing for the young people, and they had to had a duty to promote educational participation. And the educational duty is enshrined in law, but up to 16. But these people, these leaving care teams, were extending that to the post-16 frame. And those two things may be in conflict, but because if a person wants to move away to go to college, it's a problem for their housing. But they did focus minds. And the second practical initiative was the virtual school heads. This is a programme introduced in, the mid-2000s, 2007, where it started with a pilot and then they rolled it out. They had somebody, usually from an educational background, appointed in each local area whose responsibility was to promote the educational participation of young people in care. And this was initially for 2 to 16-year-olds, but has increasingly been extended beyond into post-16. And their two main roles are about promoting resources for young people and maintaining a good data collection so that we know what the problem is. And just the last slide, this is one particular model where there's a teacher employed in a local, in a leaving care team. And his specific role is on direct help and advice on educational matters. And he will do anything that it takes to get a young person to make, to engage in education and move forward, from doing homework with them, writing, helping them write applications, putting on exhibitions of artwork, accompanying them to interviews, open days, exploiting all the social, cultural links and employment links from the staff in the team. And, for example, he had a work placement, arranging work placements within the council, the local authority, was very important for these kids. They had an IT student who had a placement with the council. Once she'd had that work experience, she was able to apply to a university. Then when we got to know her, she was doing an MA, and now she has a permanent job. And that it's that kind of leg up into the world of education and employment that has to operate at all kinds of different levels. So, in conclusion, and we've got European-wide, it appears, widespread neglect of the educational fortunes of young people from public care. The young people in the social democratic states in Sweden and Denmark were having a better time than in other countries, and they were able to complete their education at 16 level, but very few were, they were being widespread neglect of their education post-16. And in England, as we've seen, there are these targeted interventions that can be successful, but they are very not structurally embedded yet at any rate, and you have to question whether they're sustainable. And our view from the end of the project was that we have to have an educational mindedness of policy concepts, expectations held by professionals. Social pedagogy may hold a way forward for that, but it was very clear from our looking at other countries where education was embedded in the approach to professional practice throughout, that people were thinking about that much more clearly from the beginning. And you can find all of our reports on the YIPI website, which is the acronym for our project. Thank you.
Question. I don't know if you've looked at any research from Ireland. I'm not aware of anything myself, but we have conditional support in Ireland, and that support is conditional, not exactly conditional, but broadly speaking. If someone leaving care engages in further education, they get a far higher level of support than someone who doesn't engage in education. But it doesn't seem to produce any better outcomes. You know, anecdotally anyway, I don't think we would have a higher level of participation based on that.
Well, in Hungary, they had all of their leaving care support was conditional on being employed or in training or education post 18. So, but they still had the same level of 6 to 7%, which was their best estimate. So it's not the only thing that you need. Conditions are important, but they're not the only thing that you need. There's a lot of it is around personal motivation and drive to actually want, to get there. Hence the young woman with the master's degree, she'd done it because she wanted to. Anything else?
Yeah, see, in relation to the social pedagogue, do you think that, because on the last slide you spoke about kind of the educational mindedness of policy, kind of medium part social pedagogy having a role to play in that, do you think some of the European countries with the pedagogue role existed, that the fact that it was a higher level of qualification than perhaps a lot of care workers in the UK may have played a part in that process also?
Yeah, because where they were in residential facilities and there were pedagogues, they had been through a bachelor education themselves. Yeah. They knew about applying to these places. They knew about the discipline of working on your own independent study. They were able to support the homework, or if they couldn't, they could find someone who would. So that kind of modelling was extremely important. There was a downside to the Hungarian experience where they have pedagogues, but which was that the employment conditions for the pedagogues didn't encourage them to continue their learning, and the young people tended to get stuck. And also, because the placement was conditional on being in education, the young people were being encouraged to do a succession of meaningless courses. So, you know, there are difficulties in all of these. There's no one perfect model out there. It's a question of looking at it from all sorts of different perspectives.
Good, thank you, Claire. Now we have Frank Delano from the US. I have a handout that I will be wandering around giving it. Well.